Okay, thank you very much. So I'm going to talk about and give a review of some evidence for X-ray line emission in gamma ray burst afterglows, or in some cases that there isn't any evidence. And this is work done with various collaborators, mainly with Derek Watson at University of Copenhagen, as well as various people, my former colleagues at the University of Leicester. So this is just an overview of what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to go back to the two or three examples of XMM Newton spectra gamma ray burst afterglows, and in particular talk about the cases where there's evidence possibly for soft X-ray line emission. And the most notorious example of this is in a burst called GRB01-1211. I'm also going to briefly touch on the statistical significance debate in this in 01-1211, as well as in several other bursts. I'm also going to generally review the properties of X-ray afterglow spectra from both XMM and from SWIFT, and basically show that actually excess X-ray absorption above galactic is common. And it's also perhaps fair to say now that we're not seeing any strong evidence for INK lines in either the XMM or SWIFT spectra, and certainly not in cases where the redshift is known. But what perhaps there could be from the very recent work is evidence for very soft, maybe even thermal spectra in some early time flares seen with the SWIFT XRT. So just to review where we sort of stood a few years ago, obviously there were two major models for the production of GRBs, and it's pretty well established now that the long duration gamma ray bursts are associated with the Collapsar model, and obviously evidence from this has come from direct spectroscopy now of the lights of 03, 03-29 and 03-12-03. And it's also thought, and certainly the SWIFT mission is helping with the localization XRT, that short gamma ray bursts may come from a different population, perhaps some merging compact objects such as neutron stars or neutron stars black holes. But at the time, certainly the evidence for the X-ray line emission from the long duration GRBs, which is what I'm going to exclusively talk about in this talk, was seen as quite important, as it was a possible link between hypernova and the long GRBs, and also because it provides possibly a rich diagnostic of the material around the GRB and obviously the GRB progenitor. So this is the situation before SWIFT and even before XMM Newton, and some of the earliest X-ray afterglow spectra basically were obtained by Beppo Sachs, which mainly shows sort of parallel spectra and in some cases sort of free sigma detections of INK lines, which may have indicated that the progenitors were iron rich. However, I think it's probably fair to say now, looking back on it, reanalysis of several of them by Masso have showed that perhaps the iron line detections are not statistically significant when you basically account for the number of bins in the spectra where you might expect to observe such features. Well, what about the role of XMM? Because it obviously has a lot higher effective area than Sachs or even Chandra. Well, this was the burst GRB01-1211, which caused quite a lot of controversy. It had a measured redshift of 2.14 on the optical afterglow, and it was observed with XMM for several hours at about 11 hours after the initial GRB detection by Sachs. Obviously, this was at the time actually one of the best signal-to-noise examples of an X-ray afterglow, obviously before the era of SWIFT data. And what we found at the time seemed to be evidence for a series of humps in the afterglow spectrum from XMM Newton, and the PN spectrum here is shown in black, which is the one with by far the largest effective area. And we identified these series of humps in the spectrum with the hydrogen-like emission lines from the abundant, basically the alpha burning elements such as silicon, sulfur, and argon, and which seems a fairly reasonable assumption given the high abundances of these elements, and also the fact that the lime and alpha lines are essentially often the strongest lines in some cases observed in the X-ray alpha glow spectra. And we also found that if we identify these humps with the hydrogen-like emission lines, that they're slightly offset from their expected energies. Of course, the redshift is known for this burst, and from that we derived that the material that we were seeing in the XMM Newton spectrum was outflowing at a velocity of about 0.1c. Further evidence of this also came from Chandra, a paper by Butler et al. And the link here, basically, that we were perhaps seeing an expanding shell of gas coming out from the GRB progenitor at the sorts of velocities, 30,000 kilometers per second or so, that you might expect. And just quickly to point out some of the properties that the line emission was observed to fall faster than the continuum. This is the continuum light curve. This is the line light curve, basically summing up the flux of all the emission lines. And so it's short. And we also favored, so probably the material originates from close to the GRB progenitor and its high density, decaying quickly. And we also favored thermal models, basically, for the line emission. And I'm going to come on to this a lot more later in the talk. Just briefly again, if you took the measured positions and the line set, assuming that they are the hydrogen light lines, and then again, this is offset from the host galaxy redshift, which implies the velocity of just under about 0.1c. So that's all well and good, and obviously at the time was claimed as evidence linking long GRBs with hypernova explosions. So, but then the debate rumbled on for probably the best part of sort of 2 years or so. And so the paper came out by Rutledge and Sarko in 2003, which said basically that the statistical significance of the X-ray lines was somewhat overstated. They tested various scenarios, adding all five lines, adding two lines, etc. I won't go into the details, but basically this the paper claimed by allowing for a blind trial, that is, you search for line features at any energy in the X-ray spectrum, if you don't know what the energies are a priori, that this line significance is lower, probably in the best case at about sort of 2 sigma or so, whereas the significance would be quite a lot higher if one knew the energies beforehand, more like 99% or 99.9%. So this was the rebuttal paper to our original paper, and then we published the rebuttal to the rebuttal paper. So if I can now remember the argument, it was 2 or 3 years ago. We basically did a very similar bunch of simulations, again 10,000 spectral simulations, Monte Carloed, and basically with the null hypothesis that the spectrum is just fit with a power law, and then added the three strong emission lines we saw in the spectrum, and actually importantly allowed the energy of the lines to vary in the fit, and also step through the fit, so energy is a function of chi squared. And basically found that our rate of false positives was something like 0.03% or 3 in 10,000, which is something like 3.5 sigma. Doesn't sound a lot, but actually in X-ray astronomy, I guess like 99.9 whatever it is percent is quite high. But the crucial assumption here, actually, that I'm going to come on to in the next slide, is whether what the continuum is, and whether the NH is actually equal to the galactic NH is due to the line of sight in the Milky Way or not. Yeah, good. Yeah, well, that obviously factors in as well. So you there were basically three different spectral slices, so that would reduce it a little bit. Yeah. So there was going on even further, then there was a further independent analysis by Nat Butler very recently. And basically, I think has sort of solved some of the differences and arguments in this debate, and has basically done three different tests, the good old F test, the match filter technique used by Rutledge and Sarko, and also the doing delta chi squared Monte Carlos, which is the method we use. In all cases, they find that the line set is about 3 sigma significance. That is, if you allow the NH, if you tie the NH to the galactic value, and the significance drops to about 1.5-2 sigma if the NH is allowed to go 3. So I think it really, in this object, the critical assumption is what value you believe for the NH. However, given that the NH from the whole spectrum was absolutely consistent with galactic to within about 20% in measurement errors, also the early Sachs data are consistent with NH equal to galactic, it maybe it's a reasonable assumption. But anyway, that seems to be the gist of the argument, and basically accounts for the difference in delta chi squares by through the different methods. So moving on to further examples, this was a burst 03-02-27, which was one of the first integral bursts, which was observed by XMM a few hours after the burst detection. And this is one of the high signal to noise afterglow spectra we certainly obtained with XMM. And so I plot the data here from the last third of the data. And I do this quite on purpose. I don't plot the model on top of the data. I just plot the data. So you can actually make up sort of your own mind without like a line, if you like, going through the data, like leading the eye, as to whether you think there are emission lines in this spectrum or not. Unfortunately, there's no known redshift for this burst, and it's unlikely to be now. However, if again we play the same trick and identify what looks like the four strong peaks in the spectra, with the lines, the hydrogen light lines from silicon through to calcium, we would expect a redshift of about 1.4. And the significance, if you try different estimates, varying from conservative to less conservative, is around in the 3 and a bit to nearly 5 sigma range. And the important point to note, both in this spectrum and probably all the XMM spectrum, it doesn't look like there's strong evidence for Y and K lines. The interesting thing here, if you believe the line detections which pop up in the last part of the observation, the fluxes appear to increase with time. And in the paper, we sort of predicted that may be due to a post-burst injection of energy, which is quite interesting now, given that what we know about the early light curves of X-ray afterglows with SWIFT, showing basically many flares during observation. So it's possible that the flares may be excite material. So here's just an animation of what we thought was happening to the spectrum. So as the continuum level dropped, basically, then obviously it's easier to see the lines, and the flux of the lines also increased with time. Okay. One final example with XMM I'm going to touch on briefly was that this is probably the brightest X-ray afterglow that XMM observed. It's 040106. And this is after only 6 hours. There was a soft excess in the EPIC spectrum, and although it's still quite weak with the RGS, this is the only RGS spectrum we've really been able to get out of all the XMM afterglows. And there's possible indication here for broadened lines with basically a forward fog maximum of about 16,000 kilometers per second. However, we're still working on the Monte Carlo simulations for this one. So at the moment, that result is still seen as tentative. Let's get that. So the models, if the emission lines are real, and then I think it's fair to say there haven't been any definitive detections, what's the mechanism causing them? Well, in the XMM data, certainly we're favoring the models like the thermal models, basically because of the lack of an ion K line. In reflection models, in almost all cases, you see a very strong ion K alpha line. It is possible to fine-tune the model, actually, and to make the ion K line a little bit weaker in some circumstances, if you tune the ionization. But in almost all circumstances, in the reflection case, you'd expect to see the strong ion K alpha. But the XMM data appear to fit well with thermal models, temperatures of about a keV or so, which I'm going to come on to right at the end of the talk in a couple of examples from Swift XRT. Where do the lines come from? Well, there's probably two favored types of geometries. You've got either an expanding shell of gas, could be the ejector from the common envelope phase or supernova, whatever you prefer, probably. Or you have reprocessing from actually perhaps within the star itself, or basically where the GRB jet is forcing its way out. So, let's in the final part of my talk mention some of the newer data from SWIFT, which is obviously an extremely important mission because although its overall effective area is a lot less than say XMM Newton or even Chandra, it's able to get to the burst a lot quicker within minutes or less than minutes. And so what has SWIFT has been seen in terms of X-ray afterglow spectra? Well, firstly, this is one example, which is nice because actually the light curve is very simple. This is GRB 050326. And it's a rare example of a SWIFT light curve that just actually shows a parallel decay. But actually the XMM data are plotted over this in red. It shows that the two missions agree quite well. The systematics between the two are quite low. The XMM spectrum, which is higher signal of noise than the XRT spectrum in this case, just shows an absorbed parallel. So certainly no evidence for line emission here. We do see the excess X-ray absorption, which we've also seen in about half the XMM follow-ups as well. So that does appear to be a common property of afterglow spectra. And certainly there's no obvious strong inconsistency between the XRT or the XMM Newton data. Here's another example. This is this 050713A from this summer. It shows that basically the typical the SWIFT light curve, you've got early flares, then you've got this flat energy injection part of the light curve of probably flatter than T to the minus 1, and then it's steepening again to T to the minus 1.4, 1.5. After a few tens of kiloseconds. And again, this is another nice example of an absorbed parallel, so no lines there either. What about the very well-known burst at redshift 6.3, 050904? Now, this was an absolutely spectacular light curve because it showed a whole series of flares, basically, well into several orbits into the observation. Obviously, there's a time dilation effect here because of the very high value of 1 plus z, but nonetheless, even in the rest frame, the flares carry on to way past 10 to 4 kiloseconds. And so what do we see here? Well, of course, at such high redshift, all the soft lines would be well outside the bandpass of the XRT or any other X-ray telescope for that matter. So the only lines we could look for here and would be the iron or nickel lines, the only ones we would see. So they would be redshifted. I know it's quite unusual to think of this, but the iron K line would actually appear at an energy of 0.9 keV. But quite clear in this spectrum, so this is just the evolution of the spectrum from the different phases in the light curve. And it just goes from hard to soft, just a nice parallel going from gamma of 1.2 to 1.9. Again, with some evidence of excess absorption, and we can put very firm limits on the strength of the iron K alpha line. It's basically less than about 50 eV in the rest frame. So, but maybe that fits with the very high redshift progenitors basically being metal poor, so the abundances are low, and we don't see much of an iron line. So this is an example of a flaring gamma ray burst, obviously, but a little bit different. But I'm going to show two now that are somewhat different. And this is mainly work that was started by Nat Butler, who's done a systematic search through the XRT light curve, and basically singling out spectra and it has to be automated because there is so much Swift data. But singling out spectra that appear to differ basically from just the standard power law or absorbed power law spectrum. So this is one of them which I've sort of done a little bit of work on, actually only in the last week. But this is GRBO50822, which shows strong flare. So this is just the light curve from the first orbit of data from the XRT, just from the window timing mode. Ignore the time axis here. That's just gone. Never mind. The flare is basically extremely soft. So this is the hard band from about 1.5 to 5 kV. This is the soft band from 0.5 to 1.5 kV. And this flare at later times, which lasts for a few hundred seconds, is incredibly soft. And if there's enough counts in it, I mean, the absolute count rate up there is about 40 or 50 counts per second in each band. So this is one of the brightest known examples of these early time flares. And if you just look at the time average spectrum one, which is shown in the top right, then the power law is, you have to fit to this, it's incredibly steep. It's a gamma of 4.5, and it's just, again, it's just rolling over a little at the soft band. And it's also quite a poor fit, a reduced Christ grid of about 2 or so. And it's even more interesting, actually, if you split the spectrum up into different time chunks, which is what we've done, into 50-second slices. What we see is a clear evolution of the spectrum, basically, during the flare. It goes from hard to soft. So starting at a gamma of 4, which is soft enough in itself, and ending up at about a gamma of 7. I would argue maybe perhaps at such steep spectra are maybe somewhat physically implausible, and the spectra also better fitted with thermal models, which then naturally account for the steep nature of the spectra and the rollover at lower energy. So what we could be seeing here is basically just during the flares, as you've seen, some sort of thermal emission. And it's interesting to note that that you can fit very well, for instance, with a black body or with a Meikle or a Bremsstrahl lung, you can't tell really. But the temperature decreases by about a factor of 2 on the time scale of a few hundred seconds. So that if it's cooling, it would be by very dense material, probably about 10 to the 12 or so. And again, so the spectra say incredibly soft. These are just the two different models fitted, and they show this very soft spectrum with the rollover at low energies, essentially. So they could be very steep power laws, gamma 6 or 7, with absorption. So they're very narrow, and they're probably better fitted with thermal spectra. And that was, it's interesting that in two or three of the XMM cases, we were predicting the same sort of thing. Again, this is another example of an extremely soft flare, GRBO50714B, which I believe that Andrew Levan is working on. And just the spectra extracted during the bright flare seen in the first orbit, in this case in photon counting mode. Again, another very steep spectrum, gamma of 6 or so, rolling over to lower energies, which could alternatively be fit by thermal models. And again, the timescale here for the flare is a few hundred seconds. So, those are all the facts. So how can we sum up basically on one page now what we know about the X-ray spectra of GRB afterglows? I think we can say that there's a few cases where there's been claimed examples of soft X-ray line emission, certainly in three cases with XMM Newton, and also one case with Chandra. But since we've looked with both XMM and Swift, there really doesn't seem to be evidence for the very early ion lines that we've seen, for instance, in some of the SAC spectra. If you believe the line detections in some of the cases in the soft X-ray lines, then the high velocities of about 0.1 C would seem to be another help in the link between long GRBs and the collapse oil models. The detections, however, and I think Massot will say exactly the same thing, basically, are very low to moderate significance at best, a 3 or 4 sigma. If you account properly, if you do your stats properly, if you Monte Carlo them and account for the fact that you have many trials, not only in the number of energy bins you're searching, but actually, and certainly in the case of the Swift archive, the number of spectra that you're searching. There haven't been any clear lines at all seen in the Swift XRT. However, it does have a much smaller area than XMM. On the other hand, it does get to the burst a lot quicker. So there have been no strong written 5 sigma detections have been made. Now, to really do this and to make progress on this field is going to be difficult, because the CCD spectra basically inherently limited to some extent, but they're always going to be a little bit model degenerate. You're never going to be quite sure where the continuum is, and certainly in the case where you might be claiming that there could be a set of soft X-ray lines. So the progress here is really to attain high resolution spectra. But the difficulty with the current gratings, either on Chandra or on XMM Newton, is that it requires high signal to noise. Otherwise, basically the dispersed spectrum will be very noisy. So you really, to make further progress now requires high throughput spectra and high resolution. So very bright bursts are needed for this. Certainly, we're now seeing that the X-ray absorption is very common. But again, I mean, to get any useful diagnostics in terms of can you constrain the redshift from that, I would also say that it needs high-resolution data. But one interesting new thing that may be coming out in certainly at least 2 or 3 cases with Swift is some of the early time flares seem to show very soft spectra. And perhaps these could be thermal, and so in retrospect we were also predicting that from the XMM Newton observations as well. I think I'll stop there.
All right, questions here.
I just had a couple of comments. First of all, the light curve that you showed for 050904 has a serious problem with it in the energy conversion factors that results in a non-physical discontinuity.
Yeah,
and we
right.
brought that to Derek's attention back in September. I'm very disappointed that he didn't fix it.
That really needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
It's an old plot actually that's shown now. I just didn't get time to change.
In terms of the X-ray lines, of course, we're very disappointed. We aren't finding lots of them with Swift. I would just caution you in interpreting soft feature or faint features in the spectra,
sure.
but there are still some issues with the response matrices.
Yeah.
And that includes a bunch of known line-like emission and absorption things that show up when you look at very deep calibration sources. So you have to be really careful about interpreting those. Hopefully, a lot of that is going to be addressed in the next set of response matrices that are going to be released
okay.
in the next few weeks. And you might want to go back and relook at things with those. But
yes,
even
certainly.
Those still have residuals at the 5% level.
Yeah, and I've seen some residuals in the spectrum myself, like the 2KV, for instance, is a quite common one. But I mean, the interesting thing I was saying from the Swift soft spectrum, not that I'm claiming that there's any line features there, but that it's really the shape of the continuum that's been quite interesting.
I understand this when you say you could fit the continuum by thermal emission is just fit, but if you want to give a physical meaning.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not saying that there's not a parallel continuum as well.
No, let me finish. Yeah. Just the thermal brainstorm, I mean, optically thin frame brainstorm, but since you have the sizes already fixed, upper limit, so only way to get luminosity you should increase the density of electrons.
Absolutely.
And then you come to the very large optical depth. So
yeah.
it could be quantized, so it's not self-consistent.
Mm.
As a fit is okay, but as a physical minimum.
Plus you also require high densities from if it's thermal, it would have to cool very fast because you see from the change in the temperature. So, I mean, maybe that's not the only interpretation, but it also seems unusual to me that you have a very sharply rising gamma of 7 spectrum, which is then being absorbed by a few 10 to the 21 at the other end, so it basically is a very small peak. It's just strange.
I have a question about the cooling. Cooling is much more efficient if you have emission lines.
Yes, of course.
Does that give you any handle on whether you're detecting lines or you
I don't think
don't have enough uncertainty in the density.
It's too much uncertainty, and also coupled with what Dave was saying about the calibration.
Well, I find it very surprising to have the surrounding of the environment adjust itself. The intensity of the line will be like the intensity of the ejecta of the X-ray.
Right.
So how this miracle happens? Of course, in the theoretical model, you just adjust it to do that. But how nature does know, I mean, the environment knows how much the jet itself is going to emit. On the other end, I think it is much more probable that the ejecta itself emit atomic lines which are shifted, and in my opinion, may have been misinterpreted as magnesium, silicon, and so on. They just may be just atomic lines, blue shifted by the large Lorentz factor of the ejecta.
Yeah, possibly. I haven't looked into that.